Greetings,
Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Coast to Coast AM. My name is Ian Pundit. And to the hostile invading alien armies hovering silently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmosphere, remember, eat the Canadians first, but save the Albertans for dessert. That was the request from last night's open lines. And I believe it was specifically the Calgarians, if I remember correctly. It was Albertans in general, but if you could just wait to the very end for the Calgarians, which sounds like a race from Star Trek, doesn't it? Captain, we have the Calgarians on the hailing frequency. Spock, I am from Canada. So we're going to do a little open lines coming up this hour on Coast to Coast AM, and then we're getting to our guest, which I'm super geeked about. This is a return visit on a subject which seemingly has come up a lot. I think not just when I'm on Coast to Coast, because I'm fascinated by what's happening to our, you know, our universities and colleges as a result of COVID, and some of the predictions of just how few colleges may be left after the drop in attendance, the expected drop in enrollment coming up later on this year, that many hundreds of colleges, which are names that you know well, maybe not far from you, are underfunded, unable to withstand a period of time when they would not have a major influx of cash coming in from arriving students. They've already been in financial trouble, and this will just kill them. And it's sad to think that, but there have been other troubles for a long time, specifically the student loan system in the United States. And our guest tonight will discuss student loan justice and specifically how massive penalties and what he refers to as draconian wealth extraction mechanisms are in place to collect inflated student loan debt. He wants to treat student loan debt like any kind of debt, but it is actually protected debt. If that sounds weird, it is, and we'll get more into that coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. First, though, if you've been to the website at coasttocoastam.com, then you've already seen a couple of these really cool stories. I love the photographic images that were created by a professional photographer that added these beautiful vintage UFO images into these, you know, sort of like bucolic scenes of cows and other things. It's really cool. And this is like, they look not just believable, of course, you know, that's just for fun, but it's a nice job. And then there's that other story, which we'll get to coming up next. You have to hear about it. It's the story of the stone eggs, these giant stone eggs that have been found in fields in New Hampshire. And we have somebody who's an expert on that coming up next. What else could they be? On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Always terrific stories waiting for you at coasttocoastam.com, along with all the links that you need for the other things that make this show so fun every night on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you know the numbers right now, for open lines, feel free to call them. If you need them at the bottom of the hour, we'll run them again. We'll get to some open line calls this hour. So, you know, just go ahead, Michael, send me any that start popping up. And first, I want to get to one of the stories that appeared on the website tonight, which I thought was fascinating. Remind me of a former colleague. Brian Hill wrote this article for the website ancient-origins.net. You can link up to it at our website, coasttocoastam.com. The story is about an out-of-place artifact, the mysterious stone egg of Lake Winnipesaukee. Here's the story. According to Brian, in 1872, construction workers digging a hole for a fence post near the shores of Lake Winnipesaukee in New England found a lump of clay with an egg-shaped artifact inside 6 feet below the ground. Called the Mystery Stone, It is one of New Hampshire's more curious and lesser-known relics. Amateur and professional archaeologists have speculated about the origin of this strange artifact for well over 100 years, with no clear answers emerging. Now, what's compelling about that is this rock type is not familiar to that part of New Hampshire. And there are no other known objects bearing similar markings or design anywhere in the United States. So it may very well have been the work of someone living in a faraway place and time, as some people have speculated, since its fine workmanship has been produced by, you know, others over the years. They've seen other types of things that have been done, you know, scroll work and all. But one professor of prehistoric poultry science at the University of Mobile Home in Mobile Home, Alabama, Dr. Jonathan Crane, begs to differ. Dr. Crane maintains the only logical explanation for the appearance of giant stone eggs in New Hampshire is that at one point, all of New England was overrun by giant stone chickens. And here to discuss that is Dr. Crane. Dr. Crane?
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And I must say, first off, that these stone eggs are in the same category as the wonders of the megaliths of this world.
There you go. Everybody recognizes right away the voice of Tom Danheiser on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for going along with our little subterfuge here. I'm not ridiculing the belief that there could have been at one point giant stone chickens roaming across prehistoric New Hampshire. However, that isn't why we're actually having you here.
It's a great story, though.
I thought it is a great story. In fact, you should do something about that next week, maybe. But you know who Dr. Jonathan Crane, does that name sound familiar to you?
It does. It does,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. From the Scarecrow, from Batman?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure there is no such thing as prehistoric poultry science. But if there was, it would be at the University of Mobile Home in Mobile Home, Alabama. So, you're here for a reason, and it's a special reason. And so I just wanted to give you that chance with that introduction.
Well, Ian, you're very nice. And last night I had simply asked if you wouldn't mind wishing somebody happy birthday. And you, being the radio guy that you are, have to take it one step farther.
It's not enough of a birthday surprise if it's not that like this. So go ahead. True. Wish Raquel a happy birthday.
I just wanted to wish a quick happy birthday to someone very special to me. Her name is Raquel, and she is actually more forward listening, wanting to hear you say happy birthday.
I say happy birthday to her right now, but I haven't had the pleasure of meeting her yet. I look forward to doing that at some point soon.
Well, it's just very nice of you to give her a shout out and a happy birthday. And I'm looking forward to your interview because this is a pretty wild subject.
Yeah, well, it's great. Maybe we can get her on, and we'll have her on when it's your birthday coming up. How about that? That'll be a great first hour guest. We'll get Raquel to take calls about you at the first hour.
No, maybe not. But,
all right.
I will look forward to hearing your interview because I'm lucky enough not to have student loan debt, but I want to hear.
It's insane. It's insane. I felt like I got what I needed to get out of mine, and I was glad that I didn't have to saddle my kids with any. But the whole system's out of whack, and the earth is tilting on its axis, and this is one of the things we can do, I think, that can fix it. But we'll get back to that. So thank you, Tommy. You have a good night. Give a kiss to Raquel on the forehead for me, okay?
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Now, quite seriously, the guy who does put together all these wonderful stories at coasttocoastam.com on the weekends and has been heard before on the air is Greg Bishop. And I asked Greg to come on because I got an email from him when we were talking about last night with Peter Noon, Herman's Hermits, a big fan of Herman's Hermits. Peter Noon was just a wonderful guest. If you have Coast Insider, go back and listen to those 2 hours. They're just great, especially his story about David Bowie. That's worth the price of admission right there. But Greg had emailed me because Peter couldn't stop referencing Graham Goldman, who had written some work for Herman's Hermits as well as later on he wrote For Your Love for the Yardbirds, and he wrote Bus Stop for the Hollies, and then went on to do 10 CCs. And I got this email from Greg saying that he had recently done a podcast on 10cc. And since we talk about pop culture from time to time on Coast to Coast, I should identify 10cc is one of my all-time favorite bands. And so I went to go listen to Greg's podcast on that, and I enjoyed it very much. So I just asked him if he'd come up and take a bow. Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, Ian.
So first of all, always nice to talk to somebody with whom I worked for years and have never met also.
I don't think we've ever talked. This is the first time live on the air.
It's very exciting. So thank you for giving me the heads up. What else do you do other than do the fill-in work and Coast to Coast on weekends on the website?
I do weekends, weekdays, whenever. It's random. But the other thing I do is I write books, generally about UFO stuff. I do a podcast, which is generally about UFO stuff, called Radio Mysterioso. And I do a radio show of weird music called Stop Hitting Yourself.
I love the title of that.
WFMU, New Jersey's streaming site. That's every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific. So, yeah, I do an hour of weird music every week. I've been doing it for, a year and a half now. Pretty steady.
What do you qualify as weird music?
Oh, God, outsider music. If anybody that's listening now used to listen to Dr. Demento, like that.
Right.
That kind of stuff. Stuff that's inept, stuff that's very little heard of, weird covers of things. Like I played Marlene Dietrich singing a Bob Dylan song in German a couple weeks ago on my show. So that kind of stuff.
Wow. And then you also recently did this podcast on 10cc. And so will you put the link up on the website for fans that want to go take a listen to that? Because I enjoyed it quite a bit.
The link's already up. And yeah, if you go look at that, you can link to all my other shows. There'll be a link there for all the playlists. So you can see I think I'm up to 77 shows now.
Have you ever done anything on a street musician named Lewis Hardin?
No, I haven't heard of him. Damn it. Now I'm going to have to look for that.
I'll give you a quick little thing on it, so it'll tie in together really nicely. So Lewis Hardin was a guy who had blinded himself accidentally using explosives, I think, when he was like a kid in growing up in Kansas. So not too far from here from me, from where I am. But he went on to study music. And though he be blind, he is a genius. And he was a genius at using alternative instruments, and he did something called the Moondog Symphony. He called himself Moondog.
Oh, so that's who Moondog was.
That's Moondog.
Oh,
and that's,
okay. So you said Moondog first, and I would have known. Yes.
Right. Exactly. And I did it on purpose by not saying Moondog, but he's the guy, who, of course, after whom Alan Freed named that first, the most famous, rock and roll show. And using Moondog, he borrowed the symphony and played that symphony. But Moondog himself goes on to, I think he ends up like dying in Paris or somewhere in Europe. But he was a genius. Have you ever done anything on Moondog?
No, I haven't, but other DJs on the station have. I'll look into more of his stuff. I've got friends that are totally into Moondog, so they could probably just lay it all out for me, and I could do a whole show on him.
Well, good. You should. You really should. All right, well, that's it. I'm out of your business. But thank you, Greg, and good luck and everything. And you'll put the link up to your podcast on the website somewhere tonight?
It's already up on tonight's show page.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. All right, we'll get to open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. That's Greg Bishop, who does the fill-in work. He does just a terrific job when it's time to when, especially on weekends, when the only time I interface with him. But there's a thing I want to get to real quickly. It is Memorial Day. And this came up last night when we were talking about a couple things. But because it's Memorial Day, I when we go to open lines here coming up, let's do one thing. Let's focus on those things that we know we can agree on, that people were willing to die for. How about that? We think about Memorial Day and we think about the sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice that so many people made. And I fear that too often we focus too much on our individualness instead of the rights and responsibilities we have to come together and honor those people who have come before us, who gave up their life so that we can celebrate that. So, I know there's a lot to be said for all of the different stories in the news and the disagreements that we've had. But if you could, and we'll go to open lines here in just a second, as soon as they put up some of the names. But I really do, I would like that. And don't forget, if you haven't yet, and if you've seen the statistics lately, you might have noticed that people are forgetting more and more what Memorial Day was all about. Even why we have it, young people even know it used to be a big important thing, and communities, you know, unfortunately won't be getting together quite in the way that they used to celebrate Memorial Day. So it'll get worse before it gets better. And that's what I would like, if we can, to do something about that. Spend your time somewhere this weekend honoring those who have died. Not that we can just be individuals, but that we could be a country. And to focus on that whenever we can. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, there's another great story. I don't know if you've been following this, but Elon Musk, who some of you, I mean, I know there's a lot of conversations about him. I divested of, I had owned some stock for a while in Tesla, but I not much. I'm not a hugely wealthy guy, but I owned some because I kind of believed in what he was doing. But I kind of lose track of him a little bit. I mean, I don't know where he is on things, and sometimes I think he's self-sabotaging. So I just thought I'd get rid of that stock so that I wasn't so worried about it anymore. And now then there's this story. Humanity may need more than 10,000 missiles to nuke Mars and transform the planet into something more hospitable to humans. Elon Musk, the tech entrepreneur, suggested that the huge stock of weapons needed for the project would be no big deal. Musk has previously described the prospect of using weapons to release carbon dioxide stored outside the Martian terrain, which would enable humans to move around the planet with simpler equipment. An executive director of the science and long-term programs for the Russian space agency, Roscosmos, claimed in an interview with Russian news that it would take over 10,000 nuclear warheads to bring the plan to life. Now, I think, of course, that sounds, you know, suspiciously like the beginning of some sort of like bad sci-fi movie, right? Where we're bombarding the surface of Mars with nuclear weapons to make it more hospitable for us, only to find out that along the way we have unleashed some unimaginable terror that in some way comes back to haunt us all. I certainly hope that we don't do that kind of thing, or rather that we don't do that just kind of to see what would happen if we did. I imagine we have those amount of weapons. If we don't, I'd be surprised somehow if there weren't somehow in stockpiles somewhere that no government is admitting to right now, that there may not be that many lying around. I would just prefer that we're not firing them all off into space, because, you know, it could release an attack from the Calgarians, wherever they are. Also on the website at coasttocoastam.com, the story about is consciousness necessary for reality to exist? Consciousness is like space-time before Einstein's relativity is the article in the Daily Galaxy, which we linked at coasttocoastam.com. The question has intrigued several of the planet's great physicists, including Stanford's Andre Lindy and Princeton's John Archibald Wheeler in the last decades of his life. Are life and mind relevant to the structure of the universe, or are they central to it? Are we living in a participatory conscious universe, a cosmos in which all of us are embedded as co-creators, replacing a purely materialistic universe as something that is out there and separate from us? So, in other words, are we the thing that is out there, too? So if we're always going out there, are we not also going inward as well? This is an existential question, and the kind of question which we certainly can't answer tonight, but if anybody wanted to address that in open lines, I'd be curious. you all are smart enough to have come up with those types of things in the past. And if anybody wanted to venture a guess whether we are the cosmos that we are searching for, and in which case, I sure hope we're not going to be sending those nuclear weapons out into us in the near future. Now, a quick question about the colleges and universities. I had somebody had tweeted to me, how many colleges and universities could be eliminated as a result of the coronavirus? Well, we don't have that information yet, but I'll give you the speculative number in just a minute. This is the number that some people say is the likely percentage of colleges and universities that could get wiped out within 1 year and then within 5 years. And how that pertains to college debt, too, on the way. On Coast to Coast AM, all the numbers for open lines next. This is Ian Punnett. Gordon Wayne Watts is a guy who will on occasion tweet to me at Deacon Punnett. I'm on Twitter all the time at Deacon Punnett. And he said, regarding colleges being eliminated, going out of business, that may happen. But here's the better point. Elimination, cancellation of all federally held student debt would cost no tax dollars and add nothing to U.S. debt. Why? Because we've already paid the banks in full. That's part of what we'll talk about coming up at the beginning of next hour when we discuss this ridiculous system, which is not, especially at a time when we're already under stress in so many other financial ways, we're using these, I would argue in many cases, completely unconstitutional rules to come after people for their college debt that they are protected from any other kind of debt. And this is going to get worse. So, I mentioned it, so I promised you I would. An analysis last fall by Forbes magazine. So this was even before the coronavirus. 177 of the 933 rated private schools got a D grade for financial health. So, and that was up. I mean, that is to say the number is higher than it was when it was judged just like 5-6 years ago. So schools in certain categories, particularly in the East and in the Midwest, the bottom and middle tier state schools with stagnant population growth and community colleges could be vulnerable. So not only could you be ending up carrying enormous college debt, but you'd be carrying it for a school that doesn't even exist anymore. It just seems nuts. But we'll get to that coming up next hour. First, we'll get to your open line calls next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I love getting to open lines here. First-time caller David is in Georgia on Coast to Coast AM. David?
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good. Whereabouts in Georgia are you?
I'm between Macon and Dublin.
I don't know Dublin. I don't think I've ever been there. Wait, so Dublin south of Macon.
Yeah, Dublin, southeast of Macon.
Down toward Columbus.
No, Columbus is out in the west, right on the Alabama border.
Right. But when I would go south from Atlanta, I remember going through Macon, but I went all the way down to Columbus, but I don't remember Dublin. Well, thank you. First-time caller.
Further east of Macon, say about 60 miles.
And you had a quick thought here about Memorial Day?
Yes, my father was in the, he was a chaplain. He was in the Battle of the Bulge.
How about that?
And in fact, I have his two boxes, I guess what you call them, sacraments, cross and the, it was a neat little case. It would fold out and he could build, have an altar with a cross, and all that stuff.
Like his liturgical mess kit, in a way, right?
So yeah, that's what it was. And of course, he could. He was Protestant, but he could deliver. I guess, as I'm sure he had to do, last rites or whatever to
Catholics or anybody. Yeah, there are provisions for that, and in battle, a lot of those theological lines just disappear. And it was the same thing with...
Yeah, well, he went to Yale Divinity School, and, they had to uphold the viewpoint of not only Christians sex, Catholic, but Jewish. Also Jewish. And
right.
Believe it or not, they had Muslims going to Yale Divinity in the 1930s.
Well, that didn't surprise me at all. In fact, Muslims have been at Divinity. I know a good friend who went to one of the Divinity schools.
Yeah, I mean, that was years ago, but right. I mean, and what he said, he had to uphold, in other words,
sure.
The professor would say, well, exactly. it's a master's program, of course, you
right.
graduate, but he would say, okay, today you're Jewish, you're Muslim, you're
right.
Roman Catholic, you're Baptist, you know.
You have to,
so
the
obligation. You were, didn't matter, because you
right.
would have to maintain the argument of that religion.
You were called upon, and I looked at going into chaplaincy at one point in the military, and the obligation is that you will provide spiritual guidance and care and comfort for anybody of any religion or any non-religion, and without proselytizing, and that's
course,
the rule.
Yeah, course, yeah.
Yeah, I bet he was very good at it. That's a treasure, man. That's a special thing.
Yeah,
you
I got
have.
Two of them. And matter of fact, there was a story where they had a birthday. It was his birthday in January, I guess of 45. I'm not 44. I don't know. But anyway, somebody hooked this thing up to a trailer and stole it.
Oh,
and
that's
then,
awful.
I guess when they found out it was a chaplain, they brought it back.
Oh, good.
But meanwhile, it took a while. So in other words, the women's group, I guess, got back in Massachusetts.
Sure.
Word of it, and they got him another one. So I got two of them. I got both of them.
That's totally cool. Thank you, David. I love that story. Appreciate that so much.
In fact, when I was a kid, I was whining about that he didn't bring back his service 45 Colt sidearm, because Chaplin carried a pistol, being an officer. He
right.
carried a pistol, too. So.
Well, I appreciate that story. Thank you, man. Appreciate that very much. And that's a great story to think about for Memorial Day weekend. John is in Cleveland, Ohio, on a wild card line on Coast to Coast and open lines. John?
Yes. I'd like to give some really stunning words of what I believe is the most decorated major general in the history of the country. And his name is Major General Smedley Butler. And he wrote a booklet after he retired called War is a Racket. And I think it's a good counterpose to much of the platitudes that are going on right now, and why we have to be very suspicious of the lies and the kinds of manipulations of corrupt politicians and war profiteers that led us into these wars. He said, and these are exact words, "I was nothing but a high-class muscle man for big business, Wall Street, and the bankers. A gangster for capitalism, and I could have given Al Capone a few points because he only operated his racket in a few city districts, whereas mm-hmm. I operated for big business, a racket across the world." And he specified in Central American countries, Latin American countries,
right.
and China, where he led the Marines around the world for the benefit of the Wall Street bankers and the Fortune 100 companies, and he also had another, besides War is a Racket, he'd actually tried to bring to the attention of the Dives Committee in the Congress a plot by the biggest power structure.
Right, the business plot, the famous business plot of the early 1930s, right?
Right, to overthrow Roosevelt and put the United States in alliance with Hitler and Mussolini based on the shared ideology of the big business elements in the United States and the Nazis of rabid anti-communism, anti-Sovietism.
Yeah, but there's a strong, just for people who don't know this, it's a very interesting story you're bringing up about there was this streak of fascism in the United States in the early 1930s as a result of the Depression, this feeling that we needed a strong man, that democracy had proven itself not to work, and we needed an authoritarian, and these certain business leaders had contacted him And he was the one who, because they wanted him because he was so decorated, right, to be the one that was going to lead the, that if they were able to do this, that he would be the one to take over control of the United States as the figurehead. Wasn't that the story?
Because he was very popular with the veterans of the day, because he just supported the bonus marchers who were crushed by the American military. The families marched on Washington, and he supported them. Yet the American government is sending tanks and cavalry to smash their camps. And he's elitist, very cynically figured, because of his support by many of veterans, the bonus marchers, he would be able to delude them into marching on Washington, overthrowing Roosevelt, and putting us into a fascist dictatorship in alliance with Hitler, based on the anti-communism power structure elites in the United States and the Nazis.
Yeah, Butler, General Butler was a cool guy. And I wonder whether that book is still even in print, the booklet that you reference. I'll have to go see. He had to testify in front of Congress or something before it was over. And then he wrote the booklet to sort of, and I think he got exonerated. They were able to prove, the people that had contacted him totally denied it. And then eventually he was able to prove it. Or he looked like he was a traitor and he wasn't going to go down for being a traitor. Great story. Yep. Good. War is a racket. And a lot of people who've been to war would say that too. Let me go to Stu, who's west of the Rockies in Phoenix on Coast to Coast. Stu?
Yes. I wanted to point out that earlier this month, George failed to mention a very solemn anniversary. May 4th was the 50th anniversary of the Kent State shootings in Ohio.
Yeah.
And on this Memorial Day weekend, I thought it would be appropriate to remember the 4 who were killed and 9 who were wounded in that event.
Well, let's not confuse the two. I think that May 4th would have been worthy of a mention, and I'm not sure that George didn't mention it. I didn't hear it. I never try to make the mistake of, if I don't hear something, thinking that it didn't happen. But Tin Soldiers and Nixon Coming, the famous song. I was actually playing it on that day when they were showing those images on the anniversary of Kent State. And, it's important to remember, though, the people that and I get your point, but I'd rather keep it focused on the soldiers for this weekend. But thanks for that thought. Stu, let me go to Michael, who's in North Carolina on Coast to Coast AM. It's open lines to the top of the hour. Michael?
Oh, yes. Hi, Ian.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. What's up?
Good. I was wondering if we could just finish up a conversation we had a few weeks ago, please, about some smaller, lesser-known hits from some of the bands, and I could tie it into the concept of Memorial Day if need be, please.
Well, you don't have to do that. I was just throwing that out there to try to avoid turning open lines into anything majorly political, especially on a weekend when this should be a time about coming together as a country. But, yeah, go ahead. What were I remember this conversation because what we were discussing, for people who missed it, was there are many bands that are categorized as one-hit wonders, but that's not fair because how do we even define what a hit was? It's just because we remember them for one song. It doesn't mean that was the only song they ever had that was a hit, and we were going through a couple of those. What else have you thought of since then?
Okay, well, I got another one, which I think is a great song, and it gets played somewhat, but not as much as the main hit is. The song's called Something So Strong by Crowded House, which I think is a far better song than the one that was supposedly the real big hit. But
well, yeah. So I mean, Crowded House. Now, there's a difference between like this. So Crowded House being from Australia, they had a ton of hits in Australia, and they charted lots of things. Something So Strong, Don't Dream It's Over. I happen to love Don't Dream It's Over. So I would never have put them in a one-hit wonder category. I hope nobody else does. But all right, what else?
No. Okay, well, Naked Eyes had another hit called Promises, Promises, which...
Sure.
I like that song better than the one that charted higher, but that one, I believe, did chart. Not as high as the other one, but it did chart.
Well, yeah, they did both. Always Something There to Remind Me was the big one. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then what was the other one?
Okay. And then there was another song called Brand New Lover by Dead or Alive, which charted so much as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was never a dead or alive person. So, yeah, what was their other song? I remember that one song of theirs, I kind of hated it. So what was the other one that they had?
Well, there was a song, Brand New Lover, and then there was the big one, Spin Me Round Like a Record. That was the
right. Round and round, round, round.
Brand New Lover was like a modest hit, yeah.
Right. You know, this is kind of the funny thing about those modest hits, because sometimes songs which we think of as being like monster hits really weren't the first time around. They're more fondly remembered, and they've done better since then than they did at the time. But thanks, appreciate that. Let me get a Pam, who's a first time caller, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. She's in Washington. Pam?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I never expected this to happen, but I should know better. Okay.
Why? What do you mean you should? That sounds like something like we got caught making out or something. What do you mean by that? You called.
You'll
we answered.
Find out when I tell you what I'm going to tell you. This.
All right.
And this is perfect timing.
All right.
First of all, I am a follower of Christ. However, this has to do with that, but not really.
Okay.
You have been talking tonight about the fact that our country is in danger of falling apart, and this is what I have been praying about. And God, in his timing, has got me unto you the first time I've ever tried to call.
There you go.
What I am hearing, and you will agree, I'm sure, that our nation is becoming more and more divided.
Yep.
And this is not about politics. It's not about who's right or wrong. I don't know. And I'm wise enough to know that I don't know. But I do know that the country is becoming dangerously divided. And people have been talking a great deal about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. But there's another proclamation that no one has said a thing about. It was
yep.
at the start of our Civil War when yep. Lincoln said that now is the time that we will find out if any nation divided against itself can stand, and I worded it badly, but you know what I'm talking about.
I know just what you mean, yeah, and that's what a nation cannot stand if it's divided
exactly.
amongst itself. Right.
But we are in danger of that, and it's becoming more and more yeah. obvious that one group wants to do one thing, and basically, because we are human, we all want to do what we want to do, but if we don't work as a nation, we aren't going to have a nation to worry about. This is so complicated.
Good. Let's let that stay right there so we don't dilute it any more than that, because we're coming up on the end of this hour. So I think that's important. This is what you're raising us to, and I think this is part of what I'm hoping for out of this Memorial Day weekend, is that we remembered that the people who fall on these beaches, the people who have died for our freedoms, were Democrats, Republicans, atheists, Christians, Muslims, that there was no one group that was more patriotic or their blood was no redder than anybody else's. And I think we should always use that as our star to steer by in these conversations. And we avoid nativism and other things which have been proven to fail in terms of, you know, uniting a group together. Nazism failed. For a reason, we vanquished it because it's bad and it's ugly, and we need to focus on those things which we can all agree on. And I hope that people do take a few minutes this weekend and do that before we run out of time. Ray is in Indianapolis. We'll take us up probably to the top of the hour. Ray?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a veteran, and I was in Germany during the Vietnam era, and okay. As soon as I got into country, I was whisked off into a chopper and taken to a crash site of an F-16 into a tank.
Ugh.
My point is that I want to pay tribute to the fallen soldiers, my brothers, that fell not in combat, but
oh, sure.
in accidents.
Of course.
And in
friendly fire. Anything. Any
yeah.
reason why they died in service. Oh, I hope we never, like that'll, yeah. I mean, died in POW camps, died because they had something which they got during a battle, but they didn't, it took a year from them to die from it until afterward. Oh, absolutely. And that thing about accidents, I think that's really key. So that's a good. You have to be really quick because we're running out of time. You want to say one other thing real quick?
I was so blessed to not have to go to Vietnam. I was whisked off to Germany,
right?
In a public information office.
Yes.
And saw these things. Went to AFN. And was a radio broadcaster, but I just want
to go. That's great. I appreciate that. And as a radio broadcaster, you'll appreciate it. I'm out of time. Top of the hour. All right, let's get back to let's really figure out the whole thing about college debt coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Bonnet.